NDR Info. Nachtclub.
Bei mir im Studio in der zweiten Stunde ist, wie gesagt, Bob Mould. Und es gibt ein neues Album von ihm, Sunshine Rock. Und hier ist das Stück Sunny Love Song. Sunny Love Song von Bob Mould von dem neuen Album Sunshine Rock. Und Bob ist jetzt bei mir im Studio. Hi, how are you doing?
Hi, how are you, Paul?
I'm fine. Glad you could make it. Good to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
And it was good fun getting the new album because it was such an energetic and fresh affair. I'm always kind of a bit concerned when it comes to so-called veteran artists that they're going to kind of run out of energy, and that's obviously not the case with you.
Well, thanks. Yeah, and the title Sunshine Rock and the feel of the record, it is not ironic, which I think a lot of longtime fans might think when they hear it. You know, what is this sunshine thing that Bob is trying to talk about? but yeah, it's I'm glad you like it, and yeah, it was a very conscious effort to. You know, after the last two records, we're a little heavier at times to, you know, try to lighten things up and try to actually, you know, think positively and write in that direction.
I mean, were there reasons for the fact that the last couple of albums were so much heavier or more melancholic as opposed to this album being a lot more bright and more optimistic?
I lost both my parents one after another during the writing of those records, so that was a little bit of a weight on my mind and my soul. So, you know, this time with Sunshine Rock, again, a conscious effort to try to, you know, see the brighter side of things, especially in my work.
So is it also, it's like a mixture of the fact that maybe you come to terms with the grief of losing your parents and also the fact that you're now resident in Berlin. Has that given you a new lease of life as well, do you think?
Yes, definitely. It's been a nice rebuilding process for me. I've spent the better part of 3 years in Berlin and you know, I love it here. And I have a lot of friends from back in the day in the music scene and, you know, have met a lot of new people. It's a very vibrant city. And I mean, I have a pretty normal life here, you know, just get up and go to the gym and go home, do my work, see some friends, go for a walk, that kind of stuff. So, but it's been, I think the change of pace, the change of scenery and the fact that I'm a little bit of I'm lost at times because my German is not so good in the speaking department. It's okay in the listening and a little better in the reading, but, yeah, so it's a bit of an adventure and I'm having quite a good time.
So Bob sagt, der Albumtitel und das Lied Sunshine Rock seien nicht ironisch gemeint. Er kann sich schon vorstellen, wie alte Bob Mould-Fans sich die Frage stellen, was meint Bob mit Sonnenschein eigentlich? Die letzten beiden Platten waren nämlich ziemlich schwermütig. Sie handelten von der Trauer um seine verstorbenen Eltern. Sunshine Rock ist ein bewusster Versuch, die Sonnenseite des Lebens wahrzunehmen. Darüber hinaus hat er die letzten 3 Jahre in Berlin verbracht. Und er kennt Leute von früher dort und hat auch noch Freundschaften geschlossen. Und er führt auch ein normales Leben dort, geht zum Fitnesscenter, geht spazieren, arbeitet. Und er tut sich mit der deutschen Sprache noch ein bisschen schwer, was ihn ein bisschen irritiert, aber er mag die Lebhaftigkeit von Berlin.
Has the process of artistic renewal always come easy to you? Or have you actually had to work at it over the years? And you've been around for a long time.
Well, I think the first time I had to consider, you know, wholesale changes to my work would have been back in 1988. You know, my first band, Husker Du, started in 1979. That band broke up at the beginning of 1988. And at that point, I had a choice, I guess in front of me, do I continue doing what people expect me to do, or do I take this moment to, you know, hone a new set of skills, you know, try to write from a different perspective, use different sounds. And, you know, my first solo album Workbook, I think was a bit of a shocker for people. It was an entirely new approach. That was the first time that I had used cello on a record. And it was a little more maybe autumnal in tone. So, you know, that was the first, I guess, of several times when I feel like I have changed direction. I guess another time would have been in the early 2000s when I stepped away from guitar music and I was living in New York City at that time, threw myself into the electronic music. You know, that was the sort of the era with, you know, Deep Dish and Sasha and Digweed, you know, the big clubs in the city. And
so you're talking about the modulate phase and blow
yes.
off and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Modulate. And then moving to Washington, D.C. And then the 11 years of the DJ party known as Blow Off that you mentioned. And thanks for mentioning that. So yeah, that, you know, the 2000s was a, you know, was a sort of a interesting time for me to, you know, dive into that style of music. And now in this decade, this is the fourth album in a row, which is, you know, pretty much based around, you know, alternative rock, guitar rock. And I think this record does have a few new wrinkles. So
Bob sagt, dass sich schon öfter künstlerisch erneuern musste. Das erste Mal war 1988. Seine erste Band, Husker Du, die 1979 gegründet wurde, trennte sich nämlich 1988. Da musste er sich entscheiden, ob er was Ähnliches wie Husker Du macht oder ob er versucht, sich künstlerisch anders zu entwickeln. Das erste Soloalbum Workbook 89 war für viele alte Fans ein Schock, weil die Herangehensweise so anders war. Er setzte Cello auf der Platte ein, das hat er nie vorher gemacht. Und die Stimmung von Workbook, er nennt er herbstlich. Um die Jahrhundertwende hatte er dann seine elektronische Phase mit dem Modulate-Album und das Blow-Off-Projekt gehabt. Und er war jahrelang ein bekannter elektronischer DJ in der Washington DC-Szene. Nun, in diesem Jahrzehnt ist er zum alten Alternative Rock zurückgekehrt, so Back to the Roots. Und hier ist ein Stück von dem ersten Soloalbum Workbook. Hier ist Sinners and Their Repentance. Sinners and Their Repentance von Workbook 1989 von Bob Mould.
And the next topic we want to hear is What Do You Want Me to Do? That's one of my favorites on the album. And is there a specific story behind this or anything particularly relevant to?
Well, it's so 70s big rock to me. And, you know, it's sort of, I tried to meld that onto a sort of a story of, you know, so, you know, the idea of an open relationship or somebody going and having a crazy weekend and then coming back to the nest and things are never quite exactly as they were left. So right, it's just a, you know, sort of a funny little story wrapped around a big 70s rock riff.
So das Lied, das wir gleich hören, What Do You Want Me To Do, klingt wie 70er Jahre Rock, meint Bob. Das Lied handelt von einer offenen Beziehung, wie ein Partner nach einem wilden Wochenende zum Nest zurückkehrt. Aber das Nest ist nie wieder dasselbe. Also hier ist das Stück, What Do You Want Me To Do, von dem Album Sunshine Rock. What Do You Want Me To Do, von dem Album Sunshine Rock von Bob Mould.
It's interesting because you're using an orchestra on this album, and that's the first time you've done that. But you mentioned just beforehand that you used cello on that first solo album.
Mm-hmm.
That's going back a long time, of course. So you're not completely, unusual for you to use strings of any sort, but not to this extent. I mean, it's like a proper orchestra, isn't it, you're using here?
Yeah, it's an 18-piece orchestra.
18-piece, you know, right.
Six cello, six viola, six violin. And one thing that people would say to me about my work and fair, you know, a fair critique is, you know, we love what you do. We love the density. We love all these, you know, these sort of heavy, low-lying clouds of harmony. But sometimes we lose the melodies. And, you know, I was getting close to the end of the writing process for this album, Sunshine Rock, and I just sort of had a moment where I was like, I've got these keyboard melodies. Why don't I turn these all into strings and see what happens? So I built out the parts, built out the arrangements. I have a friend who actually plays cello in Chicago, and I reached out to her and said, can you help me with the scoring? Which she did. And then we had one more person come in who does a lot of string arrangements for other people, and he came in and was like, they pretty much did everything in one afternoon. It was amazing.
Es gibt Orchesterarrangements auf dem neuen Album. Ein 18-köpfiges Orchester. Er sagt, dass man ihm das manchmal vorgeworfen hätte, ein so dichtes Soundgewebe zu schaffen, dass man die Melodien kaum wahrnimmt. Also wollte er was dagegen unternehmen. Und er hatte die Arrangements erstmal mit Keyboard komponiert und dann dachte er, warum sollte man es nicht mit einem echten Orchester probieren? Er ist mit ein paar Musikern befreundet, die wussten, wie man die Songs für ein Orchester arrangiert. Und so hat es dann schließlich geklappt.
And of course, people will be surprised to see that you're using an orchestra if they think of you still in terms of Husker Du. I mean, for some people, that was the starting point. And so they'll maybe be surprised that you've actually come this far. But I mean, of course, you will have had a life before Husker Du. So, like, when you were growing up, mm-hmm, in America, I mean, do you actually listen to music in the day with strings, for example? I mean, were you fond of music of that type in the past?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, you know, I'm 58, so, you know, the mid-60s, I was 5 years old and, you know, was surrounded by used jukebox singles as a child. Those were my toys and the, You know, and those were also that music was the thing that kept me alive, so to speak. I grew up in a pretty violent household. You know, a lot of conflict. So as a child, I immersed myself in music to keep myself going. And you know, I think when people see the cover for Sunshine Rock, and they'll recognize that emblem right away. You know, I stared at that emblem every time I put on a Beatles single or a Beach Boys single, or you know. So to get back to strings, you know, both George Martin, Brian Wilson, Al DeLore, Phil Spector. I mean, you know, right. Even groups like the Left Banc, you maybe hear it in that song Irrational Poison, where it's, you know, really straight up Baroque type of string rendition. So,
okay.
Yeah, that's been in my DNA since I was a little kid.
Bob ist 58 und sagt, dass als er ein Kind war, hat er ganz viele gebrauchte Vinyl-Singles von alten Jukeboxes gehabt, von Musikboxen. Das war quasi sein Spielzeug. Und er war Mitte der 60er dann 5 Jahre alt. Und diese alten Singles hätten ihn gerettet. Er ist in einem ziemlich gewalttätigen Elternhaus aufgewachsen und Musik war eine Art Zuflucht für ihn, um überhaupt selig zu überleben. Und das Cover von dem Album Sunshine Rock sieht auch aus wie so eine 60er Jahre Popkulturzeichnung. Und das Sunshine Rock Album Cover erinnert ihn an seine Kindheit, wie er damals Beach Boys oder Beatles Platten aufgelegt hat. Und er liebte die Streicherarrangements von George Martin und Brian Wilson oder Phil Spector. Und man merkt diesen 60er-Jahre-Einfluss besonders bei dem nächsten Stück, das wir hören, Irrational Poison. Hier ist Irrational Poison von Bob Mould. Irrational Poison von Bob Mould von dem Album Sunshine Rock.
And there are, of course, there are plenty of references to Sunshine on the album, but mm-hmm. I mean, we shouldn't get too carried away about the fact that it's described as being this kind of sunny, bright album, as we've been describing it so far, and this optimistic album, maybe we forget that it is actually quite heavy, isn't it? I mean, it's still a heavy album.
Yeah, I think if one were to split the album into a three-act, you know, rendition, I think that's, you know, the act two in the middle is where things get a little murky and a little darker.
Yeah. Well, like Lost Faith, for example, or a track like I Fought, for I think also is...
Yeah, really heavy and really emotional. And, you know, Sin King, which, you know, is a song that has, you know, a couple specific meanings. I mean, there's the superficial, you know, relationship meaning, and then there's the second layer, which is, you know, speaking indirectly to, you know, our current political climate in America. So there's, you know, there's a lot of nice little Easter eggs, I guess we call them, scattered through the record. But yeah, the middle is a little dark, and then we get out of it very, hopefully, triumphantly.
Yeah, it's quite a happy ending, isn't it? Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But, I mean, now you're in Berlin. Does it make you feel detached from American life and American politics and culture? I mean, do you actually feel like an exile in that sense?
I feel a sense of relief that I am not inundated on a minute-by-minute basis, as most people in America are with this current dilemma. You know, that's not to say that I'm ignoring it or that I'm, you know, I'm not doing what I can. You know, I still vote in California, so I'm doing the best I can with that. When I go back and I tour, you know, I do, you know, simple things like, you know, make a tour poster and, you know, all the money goes to something like Planned Parenthood in America, for instance. So, you know, I'm still aware of everything that's happening, but being in Berlin, it feels much safer. I don't know if that's a false sense of safety or if that's a sense of safety relative to the American gun culture.
So it's like to get shot in Berlin, that's true.
Yeah, it's when I'm out walking at 1 a.m. and I hear behind me, I'm like, what's going on? And then, you know, it's some, you know, grandmother on her bicycle. I'm like, okay, fair enough.
Because it's difficult to kind of keep track of where you actually lived. I mean, I was thinking, where do you actually come from originally? Because I know you were in San Francisco for a while, mm-hmm. and in Minnesota. You've been in Minnesota, mm-hmm. haven't you, as well? And now in Berlin. So, I mean, have you been all over the... I mean, have you ever settled permanently, sort of where you've actually had the feeling that you're actually here permanently? Has that ever been the case? Or are you always thinking where you might be moving next?
I have come to terms with my nomadic tendencies. The first 17 years of my life, I was born and raised in the Adirondacks in upstate New York. Then I spent 11 years in Minnesota, ostensibly for university and then for Husker Du. When I was in 1989, I moved to New York City. I was there for 4 years. Then I went to Austin, Texas, then back to New York City. Then 2002, I went to Washington, D.C., and then in 2009, I moved to San Francisco. And I still have my place in San Francisco, and you know, for the last 3 years, I've had a, you know, a small place here, in an apartment here that I'm renting in Berlin, right. So...
So you've been all over the place, but at least you actually can remember exactly where you were when you were there. You know, you can remember it. It's not going to become a blur.
No, and this is the beauty of the work that I do, because I have this sort of large history that I can recite. It's I can keep it mostly straight. So.
Im Laufe des neuen Albums werden die Songs etwas düsterer, sagt Bob. Also Sin King und I fought sind sehr emotional und heavy. Sin King ist ein politisches Lied, handelt vom politischen Klima in Amerika. Der Schluss des Albums ist wieder etwas heiterer und er freut sich, dass er nicht die ganze Zeit mit amerikanischer Politik konfrontiert wird. Er hat nämlich ein bisschen Abstand in Berlin. Und wenn er in Amerika ist, dann wählt er noch. Also er veranstaltet auch gelegentlich Benefizkonzerte. Und er fühlt sich eigentlich sicherer in Berlin. Es gibt nicht so viele Waffen in Berlin wie in Amerika. Und wenn er in Berlin um 1 Uhr morgens spazieren geht und er hört etwas Lärm, dann denkt er erstmal, es sei vielleicht eine gefährliche Situation, aber dann stattdessen ist es nur eine alte Oma, die mit ihrem Fahrrad unterwegs ist. Und er hat sich daran gewöhnt, eine nomadische Existenz zu führen. Er ist im Bundesstaat New York aufgewachsen, dann nach Minnesota gezogen, dann nach New York City, dann nach Austin, dann wieder nach New York, dann nach Washington D.C. und dann nach San Francisco. Und dort hat er noch eine Wohnung, aber hört sich jetzt meistens in Berlin auf. Und jetzt das Stück jetzt Sin King von Bob Mould von dem Album Sunshine Rock. Sin King von Bob Mould von dem Album Sunshine Rock.
And in hindsight, do you think that the places where you've actually been resident at the time you've made particular works, that it's actually influenced what you do? Is that important? Is the environment important for your creativity?
Absolutely. The environment is one of the main things that goes into the work. I mean, it's, you know, if you're stepping outside, it's warm, it's cold, it's rainy, it's dry, it's the desert, it's the ocean. It's, I mean, that just on a day-to-day basis, that informs your entire outlook on life. You know, filling in around that, it's the people that you spend time with and, you know, the customs and the rituals and the routines that we all have as people. So much of that is key to the work. And, you know, with Berlin, it was a roll of the dice, I guess, because, you know, it's a city that's has a large, you know, sort of history, a heavier history, and, you know, to turn out what I think is a pretty optimistic record. I think some people are like, you've got to be kidding, right? No, I'm actually having it's really great. So it's, yeah, sometimes you can choose the parameters, but, you know, other times it just, you know, I think the city speaks to you and you have to respond to it properly.
Yeah, it's also important to get away from these cliched ideas. It's like some people think if you go to Iceland, for example, you've got to make a post-rock album. I mean, you could actually make a pop album in Iceland if you wanted to.
Absolutely, yeah, fair enough. So yeah. That's how I like to look at this. So thanks for agreeing with me on that.
Yeah, having said that, we're going to hear I Fought now, which, because it's not necessarily pop in the strict sense of the word. It's far too heavy and raging for that. Yeah. But you said it's a very emotional song. You mentioned it just briefly a minute ago. Is it a song which is of particular emotional significance for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it really harkens back to my first band, to Husker Du, and I think, you know, there's a lot of history in that song that I think if people look between the lines, it'll be very clear what the song is about. So I think it's a very fitting nod to that band and the folks that I worked with, you know, both living and past. So
die Umgebung, in der sich befindet, beeinflusst seine Musik. Ob die Sonne scheint oder ob es regnet, macht natürlich schon was aus, sagt er. Er sagt, dass die Leute denken, dass er ein bisschen spinnt, weil er ein solches optimistisches Album in Berlin gemacht hat. Viele denken, das passt gar nicht, aber das Album reflektiert seine Stimmung in Berlin. Und das nächste Stück, das wir in I Fought, ist schon etwas weniger heiter. Auf diesem Stück hat er etwas Vergangenheitsbewältigung ausgeübt, und zwar in Bezug auf seine erste Band Husker Du. Hier ist I Fought von Bob Mould. I Fought von Bob Mould von dem Album Sunshine Rock.
I mean, were you aware at the time that you were a different punk band? I mean, were you actually consciously trying to be different to contemporaries or not?
Yes.
You were?
Okay. Yes, we were. You know, we started out and it was just the wonder and the energy and the color of that scene. And then we started to see, these invisible rules, I guess. You know, you had to be Circle A anarchy. You couldn't do this. You couldn't do that. And we were like, wait a minute. Who made all these rules? So I think we veered a little bit away from the hardcore highway and sort of got off that. And I think at the same time, we started exploring, a lot more 60s music, whether it was, psychedelic music or pop music, and bringing more melody and perhaps more personal experience and thought into it. And I think I think at that point, we knew that we had something that maybe was a little bit different than what we had done before and what other people were still doing.
Is it possible to think of like one Husker Du song which is incredibly important to you even still, or is that just not possible to do? You can only talk maybe in terms of the most important album, or not even that.
Yeah, I think the most important album, historically people look at Zen Arcade, which was a loose concept double album that came out in 1984, and I think at that time that was unheard of. It was, it was almost, this. It's sort of a, what is this excess? These songs should all be 1 minute long.
A punk band doing a concept album is quite absurd, isn't it? Right?
Exactly. Right. But, fortunately there was another group, called the Minutemen who got wind of this and did the same exact thing at the same time. So it was sort of that Pet Sounds Sgt. Pepper thing as far as hardcore went. Personally, I would put my investment on an album called Flip Your Wig. It was the last album that Husker Du made for SST right before we went to Warner Brothers. And that was the first album where Grant Hart, the drummer and co-writer, the other main songwriter in the band, he and I produced the record ourselves. And that was the first time where our vision was unfettered. And I think that... I think that was also some of the best times that we had as a band, because we knew that we were right on the precipice of something bigger. So, in hindsight, it really was the best of times, for me personally. And I think it's the most enjoyable document of that band.
And is there a particular track you'd like to hear now?
We should listen to one of Grant's songs, actually. If that's okay.
Yeah, that's a nice touch, yeah.
I think Flexible Flyer is on that record, correct?
Flexible Flyer, okay.
I believe that's on about song 10 or song 11 on that record.
Sagt, Husker Du wollten auf jeden Fall was anderes als herkömmliche Punkmusik machen. Als sie anfing, ging es erstmal nur darum, energiegeladen zu sein und zur Punkszene einfach zu gehören. Dann wurde es ihnen bewusst, dass Punk ungeschriebene Gesetze darüber hatten, was man angeblich tun oder nicht tun darf. Und das sahen sie nicht ein. Und Husker Du wehrten sich dann gegen die Hardcore-Klischees, und dann entdeckten sie irgendwann 60er Jahre psychedelische Musik, und dann bekamen sie dadurch eine größere Variationsbreite. Die Songs wurden melodischer und persönlicher. Zen Arcade war ein Doppelalbum und ein Konzeptalbum. Und sowas gab es eigentlich nie in der Punkmusik. Und wir hören aber ein Stück jetzt von Flip Your Wig, von dem Album Flip Your Wig, einer Grant Hart-Komposition. Es war die schönste Zeit der Band für Bob Mould persönlich, kurz bevor die Gruppe etwas erfolgreicher wurde. Hier ist Husker Du mit Flexible Flyer von dem vierten Album Flip Your Wig 1985. Flexible Flyer von Husker Du, das war das vierte Album 1985, Flip Your Wig.
And of course he passed away 2017.
Yes.
And you hadn't seen each other for a long time, and of course you weren't friends anymore as such, were you? So, I mean, how did it affect you? Did you just have the feeling, well, I've survived and he hasn't, or how did you react to that?
Actually, Grant and I had been in fairly regular contact the last 5 years of his time. And, we had been sitting and talking about the work at hand and things that needed to be dealt with. So it's a funny business that we're in. It's, As a fan, I used to read stories about bands, and the mythology around pop music was so magnificent. You know, I never wanted to know anything but the mythology. And then I got into the business, and then I was in a band that, 30 years later has a certain mythology around it. And I understand that. And, people have different impressions of what the band was and what the relationships between the three people in the band were. I felt pretty good about the way things were towards the end. I mean, we were working towards this box set that I mentioned, and, it was a common goal. And, we would agree on a lot of things. We would argue about a lot of things. I think it's sort of that thing where it's okay to fight inside the family, but don't F with the family.
I get the point, yeah. That's a good point, yeah.
So Bob war doch in den fünf Jahren vor dem Tod von Grant Hart wieder in Kontakt mit ihm, und sie haben sich doch ganz gut verstanden. Als jung war, hat Bob Mould den Rock-Mythos um Bands geliebt, aber nun hat seine eigene Band einen gewissen Rock-Mythos, und das ist schon ein schräger Gedanke für ihn. Die Wahrheit ist, sagte, dass er sich nachher mit Grant Hart doch einigermaßen gut verstanden hat. Sie galten nämlich offiziell als für immer zerstritten. In Wirklichkeit waren sie sich manchmal doch einig, manchmal haben sie sich gestritten, und er sagt, in Familien sei Streit normal, aber die Familie ist letztendlich heilig.
Because there's been so many phases to your career. I mean, Sugar was the time when you were kind of flirting with mainstream success.
Yes.
And did you ever at any point feel hard done by that you weren't as commercially successful as people like Nirvana or the Pixies?
No. Without Husker Du, I might not have made Workbook, which allowed me to do a number of shows with the Pixies. Although I wasn't taken on as producer for Nevermind, I was certainly thrilled when that record did well, because it actually set the stage for, a project like Sugar, like Copper Blue or Beast. Right. So, no, I think things worked out exactly as they should. Had I been involved in Nevermind, I think it would not have done as well as it did. So, yay for them and yay for Butch Vig. I mean, it's perfect.
Okay.
Und fühlt sich gar nicht verbittert, dass seine Band Sugar nicht so kommerziell erfolgreich war wie Nirvana oder The Pixies. Und wenn er die Band Husker Du nicht gehabt hätte, dann hätte das Soloalbum Workbook nie existieren können. Und immerhin wurde er dann eingeladen, im Vorprogramm für The Pixies aufzutreten. Und obwohl er nie den Auftrag bekam, um das Nirvana-Album Nevermind zu produzieren, war er begeistert, dass das Album Nevermind so erfolgreich war, weil es günstige Rahmenbedingungen für die Sugar-Alben Copper Blue und Beaster geschafft hat. Und er denkt, es ist alles so gekommen, wie es sein sollte. Und wenn er tatsächlich an Nevermind mitgewirkt hätte, dann wäre es bestimmt doch nicht so erfolgreich geworden, sagt er. Und Butch Vig hätte das sehr gut gemacht, sagt Bob. Hier ist jetzt Sugar mit If I Can't Change Your Mind von dem Album Copper Blue, 1992. If I Can't Change Your Mind von Sugar von dem Album Copper Blue, 92.
Yeah, we're gradually running out of time. There is one more question I'd like to ask you, if it's not too personal, but it's of interest to me that it's been well documented that you're gay. And has that been important for your creativity over the years, do you think? Has it had any influence on your actual songwriting?
Well, I think it, in 1994, when I guess came out is the term, that was a turning point. But, historically, as a kid, I knew I was different. Throughout the Husker Du era, I think it was an open secret that I was gay. I often think there was two major components in my life during Husker Du that were very separate. There was me, the musician, and me, the struggling with my sexuality. And, that was the 80s, and things were really tough in America then for gay people. And that is, I think, a source of a lot of the anger that music held. Over time, when those two parts of myself came together, it took a while to get comfortable with that. So, yeah, I think it's tough. Recently we just lost, one of my, major influences. as a songwriter, Pete Shelley from the Buzzcocks.
Right.
And, you know, I remember going to see the Buzzcocks when I was 19, and I adored that band. And, you know, Pete's writing style lyrically, you know, taking a gender-neutral position, I mean, that had a big impact on me because I could see what was happening, and that looked like such a great way to write love songs. You know, it's simply two people, no matter what.
Well, that's so interesting that you've been influenced by the Buzzcocks. I wouldn't have necessarily thought of that straight off.
Oh, my gosh. I literally saw him when I was 19 and stood in front of him. And by the fourth song, he just, when Steve Diggle was taking a solo, Pete would lean down and yell chord changes at me.
Right, okay.
So, yeah.
So we're rapidly running out of time. It's very good to talk to you. And
great.
I know you're going to be in Hamburg in March, so we'll look forward to that.
Yeah, it should be fun. I'm looking forward to it. And thank you so much for the wonderful chat.
Yeah, thank you. And what track would you like to hear to finish off? Maybe Western Sunset, do you think?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I was thinking that. Okay, well, good to talk to you.
Bob Mould hat sich 1994 als schwul geoutet. Schon als Kind wusste dass etwas anders sei. Und während Simon Husker Du sagte, war es ein offenes Geheimnis, dass schwul war. Einerseits war der anerkannte Künstler, andererseits war dieser Typ, mit seiner Sexualität zu kämpfen hatte. In den 80er Jahren in Amerika war es nicht so leicht, schwul zu sein, sagt Bob, und das war ein Grund, warum seine Musik damals oft so zornig rüberkam. Aber irgendwann hat er sich doch wohler in seiner Haut gefühlt, und das hat eine Weile gedauert. Grant Hart war auch homosexuell, und es war schon ein großer Verlust, als starb, sagt Bob. Pete Shelley von The Buzzcocks ist nun auch verstorben. Und war nicht schwul, aber Bob sagte, hätte Lieder komponiert, Pete Shelley, die nicht geschlechtsspezifisch waren. Und Bob war 19, als die Buzzcocks live sah. Und Pete Shelleys Art, Musik zu schreiben, hat Bob sehr geprägt. Und wir hören jetzt zum Schluss der Sendung jetzt Western Sunset von dem Album Sunshine Rock von Bob Mould. Das war der Nachtclub mit Paul Baskerville, ein Bob Mould Special. Und ich wünsche euch eine gute Nacht.
NDR Info Nachrichten.